turn to the book of Isaiah. Book of Isaiah. We'll be reading in chapter 30 and also in chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 30, we'll read the first 7 verses. Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Lord, that take counsel, but not of me, and that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin, that walk to go down into Egypt, and have not asked at my mouth, to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt. Therefore shall the shadow, or shall the strength of Pharaoh be your shame, and the trust in the shadow of Egypt your confusion. For his princes were at Zoan, and his ambassadors came to Hanes. They were all ashamed of a people that could not profit them, nor be a help nor profit, but a shame and also a reproach. The burden of the beast of the south, into the land of trouble and anguish, from whence come the young and old lion, the viper and fiery serpent. They will carry your riches upon the shoulders of young asses, and their treasures upon the bunches of camels, to a people that shall not profit them. For the Egyptians shall help in vain, and to no purpose. Therefore have I cried concerning this. Their strength is to sit still. And then in chapter 40, we'll read verses 29 through 31, more familiar verses. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. Again, Isaiah ministered during the last years of the northern kingdom of Israel, and through the time when they were, to the time that they fell to Assyria. But he ministered to the southern kingdom of Judah. And the southern kingdom of Judah, of course, was following the same paths and were engrossed in the same ways that led to the destruction of the northern kingdom. And Assyria, who had taken the northern kingdom, was now threatening to destroy Judah. So it was a very trying time. It was a very difficult time, a very dangerous and challenging time that Isaiah ministered to the Lord's people. Now, the book of Isaiah consists of 3 major divisions. Division number 1 would be messages of condemnation because of sin. We see that in chapters 1 through chapter 35. The second division is basically a historical interlude concerning Hezekiah, and we read of that in chapters 36 through chapter 39. And then thirdly, in chapters 40 through 66, you have messages of comfort, messages of consolation to the people. So from that, we see that the text in chapter 30 that we just read would be part of the section where Isaiah is preaching messages of rebuke to Judah concerning their sins. And the text in chapter 40 would be a part of that section where he's preaching messages of comfort to a people that were about to go into not Assyrian captivity, but Babylonian captivity. Now, in the text in chapter 30, there was a very strong faction in Judah who thought it would be good. Again, you have this Assyrian threat, and they thought it would be good to seek help from Egypt rather than seek God for protection. And Isaiah, in the verses that we read there in chapter 30, addresses and rebukes the folly of attempting to make an alliance with Egypt to ward off the Assyrian threat. The text in chapter 40 is part of Isaiah's message of comfort to the people. And it follows the foretelling of God's people going into Babylonian captivity. If you would read chapter 39, verses 5 through 7, just prior to chapter 40, you see Isaiah's telling them that they would be soon going into Babylonian captivity. And then he receives this commission from the Lord in Isaiah 40, verses 1 and 2, to comfort the people. And what we read there in Isaiah 40 is part of that message of comfort, to reassure and to encourage a people that would soon be suffering Babylonian captivity. Now, the two texts are very similar in that they both bring forth the need of power, the need of strength, and they both mention the means of obtaining this power and this strength. So I want to speak tonight on strength to soar higher and go further. That should be the desire of every child of God, to soar higher spiritually and to go further spiritually. Such requires an extraordinary strength. And we see that here in our text. First of all, consider the subject of power and strength is addressed in both Isaiah 30 and Isaiah 40. First of all, there's human strength. The text in chapter 30, again, is a rebuke. Isaiah is rebuking a policy held by many in Judah that they put their trust and seek the help of Egypt. Notice in verse 2 of chapter 30, that walk to go down into Egypt and have not asked at my mouth. That is, they seek Egypt rather than God, to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh. They seek the strength of Pharaoh rather than the strength of God and trust in the shadow of Egypt. And we see that Judah even sent a delegation to two Egyptian cities there in verse 4, Zoan and Hanes. And this delegation came with expensive gifts. We read of that in chapter 30 and verse 6. All of this was to talk about an alliance with Egypt. So God's people, they've been brought out of Egypt, and now they're going back to Egypt, and they are seeking an alliance with Egypt and bring expensive gifts to convince Egypt to help them against the Assyrian threat. Now, such a policy would make sense to natural man. Such a policy would make sense to human thinking. But this seeking the help of man rather than God was doomed to fail. And it is still doomed to fail today. Anytime an individual seeks the help of man rather than the help of God, that is a policy doomed to failure. And that was the case here. Notice in verse 1 that seeking the help of Egypt, what it would bring. The very first word of verse 1, woe. Woe to the rebellious children. And it's an act of rebellion to seek the help of man rather than the help of God. And we see woe to them. That is, this seeking the help of Egypt would bring misery, distress, and regret. It would bring woe. And notice also there in verse 1, it would bring shame, humiliation. And we see also it would bring confusion. That is, it would bring perplexity and mayhem. Notice in verse 5 that we read there, a people that could not profit them. And then it is stated also, nor be a help nor profit. So we see that Egypt really could not help Judah and could not profit them. And it is stated twice, and then it's stated again in verse 6, a people that shall not profit them. And it is stated again in verse 7, and for the Egyptians shall help in vain and to no purpose. So we see in those verses the help of man. The help of man would bring misery and distress. The help of man would bring humiliation. It would bring perplexity. It would bring mayhem. There was no profit in it. It was all vain. In other words, it was doomed to failure to seek the help of man. The strength of man is insufficient. It was insufficient then, and it is insufficient now. Now notice in chapter 40, in verse 29, we see that man can become faint. He giveth power to the faint. So man can become faint. What that means is he can become half-hearted. He can become weak. He can become feeble and even unconscious if an individual faints. We also see that he can be in a state of no might there in verse 29. And to them that have no might. So it is possible for man to faint. It is possible for man to be in a state of no might, which is the absence of force, the absence of power. From verse 30, we see that even the strongest among men have but very limited strength. Notice verse 30. Even the youths, that's the strongest, even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall or collapse. So we see in both Isaiah 30 and in Isaiah 40 the insufficiency of human strength is addressed. And what we see in these two cases is that all earthly power, all earthly strength is limited both in range and duration. So it is folly. It is folly. It is foolishness to trust in the strength of man. No matter how strong that man might be, it is utter foolishness to seek help from man and to trust in the strength of man. He also says something about God's strength. Prior to the text there in chapter 40, again, Isaiah is delivering a message of comfort to the people. Attention is drawn to God. Notice verse 9, the last three words of verse 9. Behold your God. Why? Because that's where strength is. That's where the power is. Behold your God. Notice verse 26. Lift up your eyes on high and behold who hath. Again, it is a call to behold God. And then it goes on to mention there in verse 26 the greatness, the eminence, the prominence of his might. And then it goes on to mention that he is strong in power. He is strong in power. The word strong, of course, is used there to describe his power, his wherewithal. He is strong in power. In verse 28, it is declared that God never faints. We see it's possible for man to faint. It's possible for man to become weary. But we're told here in verse 28 that he giveth, or that God cannot faint. God cannot faint. It's not possible. It's not possible for God to become weary. So when we're talking about the strength of God, we're not talking about ordinary strength. We're talking about something extraordinary. So you have human ability, which is insufficient at best, and you have God's strength. Then notice God's strength is made available to man. Verse 29, He giveth, that is, He conveys, He imparts, He transmits power. He giveth power. Power is the active force. He giveth power to the faint, and to them who have no might, He giveth power, and now we see He, so He's the source, He increaseth strength, which is the ability. Power is the force. Strength here is the ability. And the order is significant. Power and strength. Inward force with outward results is what God gives. So God is the source. God is the force that gives us the ability to do whatever it is that God would have us to do. So we see here there is the possibility, there is the potential for the child of God to have God's power, to have God's strength. Now notice what this power and strength does. It enables one to live above the earth. Notice verse 31. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall mount up. That is, they shall ascend. They shall soar with wings as eagles. Every saved person here has the potential to soar spiritually. And the power to do so, the strength to do so, is in God. Every child of God has the potential to soar above all the storms, all the difficulties, all the conflicts, all the hindrances and the happenings of life. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. Now, the eagle, of course, was created to fly in high places. Wasn't created to live on ground level. And the child of God, likewise, is called to live in heavenly places. Not to feed upon the earth. We're called to live above, not below. And many of God's people, of course, they have weights holding them to the earth. Again, I remember seeing an eagle one time at a zoo, and this eagle has a chain attached to its legs, and that chain is bolted in a rock. So there's the king of birds that is meant to soar into the heavens, and it's chained down to the earth. A picture of many, a child of God. God saved us, and we have the ability to soar spiritually, to live above the earth, and the majority of God's people are chained to the earth. They allow the business of life, the cares of life, the pleasures of life, the responsibilities, and the love of the world to chain them to the earth. And it's sad, because they're capable of so much more. Many, of course, are really more like the chickens than the eagles. They are content to live in the chicken yard, walking around with their eyes on the ground, scratching in the dirt, Most of them, like the chicken, will never fly. They just scratch around in the dirt. Scratch around in the world. They're earthbound. And sadly, many of God's people are earthbound. Again, just scratching in the dirt of the world. They're meant to soar. There is the power and strength available to soar, but they're bound to the earth. Also notice it is a strength that enables one to achieve spiritual progress. Verse 31, they shall run. They shall soar. They shall run, that is, press forward and not be weary. And they shall walk. That's consistent progress and not faint. To run and to walk, that speaks of progression. It speaks of advancement. It speaks of a concentration of purpose. If you're running or walking, doesn't matter. There is a concentration of purpose. And there is a perseverance. So notice those words there in verse 31. You have mount up, you have run, and you have walk. The child of God is created to mount up. That is, the child of God is created to rise above the world. Child of God is created to run and to walk, not to get stuck. So the child of God is created to go beyond this world, to go beyond this life. And there is the power and the strength to do so. Because the power and strength of God is beyond human comprehension. Because that is so, we have not fully grasped. We have not fully grasped how high we can go spiritually. And we have not fully grasped how far we can go spiritually. But it is the power and the strength of God that enables us to ascend high and enables us to go far. And because we have not comprehended that power and strength, neither have we comprehended how high we can go and how far we can go spiritually. But every child of God can soar. And every child of God can go further. And the power and the strength that is required to do so is in the Lord. Unlike the strength of man that is unprofitable and fails, not so with God. God's strength is always profitable, and God's strength will not fail. So we have human strength, it's insufficient. It will not enable you, whether it be your own strength or someone else's, it doesn't matter. It will not enable you to soar higher spiritually, and it will not enable you to go further spiritually because it's insufficient. It wears out. And oh, how many individuals are trying to serve God in their own strength or in the strength of someone else. It's doomed to failure. It's not if you're going to fail, it's you've already failed. You've already failed. And you will continue to fail. And before long, what happens is you end up like the chicken, just scratching at the dirt. And that becomes one's spiritual life. So let's look at the means or the method of receiving God's strength. That's addressed in both our text, in Isaiah 30 and in Isaiah 40. These are the means that are ordained of God if we are going to obtain this power, this strength. All through the Word of God, we are exhorted, be strong. Be strong. God said that to Joshua. and on it continues throughout the Word of God. Be strong. Be, of course, is present tense. That means we're to continually be strengthened. We're to be continually strengthened. If there is a time when we are not being strengthened, something's wrong. Something's wrong. And we're in danger. Be strong. One of the means of obtaining this strength is we have to realize our own weakness. Paul said in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 10, when I am weak, then am I strong. That is so true. Because it is as we realize our weakness that we depend on His strength. Until we realize our weakness, we will not depend upon His strength. So there has to be a realization of our own weakness. And there has to be a realization and a belief that the Lord is the power and the strength needed. Those two things, a realization of our own weakness, a realization that the Lord is the power and strength needed, results in what we read in 1 Chronicles 16 and verse 11. Seek the Lord and His strength. Seek His face continually. So when we realize our weakness and we believe that He is the strength that we need, we seek Him. We seek His strength. Now, in our text, we are explicitly told that there is strength. The way to be strengthened is stillness and waiting before God. Notice what it says there in chapter 30 and verse 7. He's rebuking those who thought their strength was down in Egypt. He says their strength is to sit still. Their strength is to sit still. There's strength there. Chapter 40, verse 31. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew or exchange their strength. Their strength is to sit still. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Both cases, it is a situation where people are being strengthened. And they're being strengthened by the same means in both cases. Concerning this, we need to understand what it means to be still. What it means to wait. Because there are many misconceptions concerning being still and waiting. This is something that is a very strange concept to most of God's people. But most of God's people live like chickens just scratching in the earth, and here's one of the reasons why. Because they've never learned to sit still and to wait upon the Lord. First of all, it is not idleness. It is not idleness. It is not resignation from all activity. For being still and waiting is an activity. To be still is an activity. You tell someone to be still, you're telling them to do something. That's an activity. You tell them to wait, that's telling them to do something. That's an activity. Being still and waiting is an activity. But it is descriptive of a state and exercise of mind. It speaks more of an exercise or a state of mind or heart than anything else. It speaks of the feelings and the aspirations of the heart before God. First of all, may I say, to wait upon the Lord or to sit still before Him is to be in His presence. You can't wait if you're not in His presence. It's a matter of sitting still before God. So it's to be in His presence. And in His presence, there is strength. Always. It is to quiet ourselves. Their strength is to sit still. It means to quiet ourselves. There's to be a stillness. It means to focus our attention upon Him. They that wait upon the Lord. Well, if you're waiting for someone, that's who your attention is upon. So to sit still and to wait upon the Lord simply means that you focus your attention upon Him. And may I say, in doing so, does not that quiet the heart and the mind? It causes us to be still. To wait upon Him is to look intently to Him for communication from Him. We read in Proverbs 8 and verse 34, "Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors." Waiting. Waiting for what? To hear. To hear from God. So, it is searching for God. It is seeking the face of God. Our desire is toward Him. They that wait upon the Lord, that means their desire is toward Him, their delight is in Him, their dependence is upon Him, and their devotion is to Him. To be still and to wait is to make His will our rule. So much so that we will not act without it. We will not act without God's rule. Without God telling us how to act. How many times we have heard, it's better to do something than nothing. That is a lie from the devil. That will ruin your life. God says, Isaiah says, inspired of God, their strength is to sit still. They that wait upon the Lord will receive power and strength from God. So to be still and to wait upon God is really a state of submission to who God is. It is submission to the fact that He knows my situation. It is submission to the fact that He is able to do whatever it is that needs to be done. To sit still and to wait upon God is to bring your life under God's umbrella of authority and direction. It is to submit to the authority and direction of God. I'm not going to do anything until God says so. It is submitting to the authority of God. Believing that God's timing is always best. Always. It is to isolate ourselves with God. To get along with God. That's what it means. To be still. That's what it means to wait upon the Lord. Now this requires faith. This requires trust. This requires complete yielding to the fact that God knows. And that God is able. And that His direction and timing is best. Do we believe that? Do we believe that God's direction is best? Everyone would say, yes, I believe that. Do we believe that God's timing is best? And again, everyone would say, yes, I agree with that. Then why don't we wait for Him? Because we really don't believe that. If we really believe that, we're willing to wait because we know that God's direction and God's timing is always best. To be still and to wait upon God is to know that without Him, I can do nothing. I can do nothing without Him. Therefore, it is wise to wait for Him. It is always a test of faith. I believe it's the greatest test of faith that there is. I don't believe that sickness is the greatest test of faith. I don't believe that difficulties is the greatest test of faith. I believe the greatest test of faith is to wait upon the Lord. To be still. To be still. To quiet ourselves before the Lord. Remember, the Egyptians pursuing Israel, they have Israel hemmed in, and God's instruction to Israel is, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. What would have happened had Israel taken matters into their own hands? Consider their situation. They were very limited to what they could do. There was really no place to go. And if they were taking matters into their own hands, the results would have been disastrous, as it often is with man today. And God says, fear not, be still. Fear not, be still. And then in chapter 14, verse 15, after they stood there a while, I believe the Egyptians got so very close, He then said, go forward. In other words, it's time. It's time to move. Never, ever underestimate the importance of God's timing. Never. God is sovereign. He controls all matters. He controls all hearts. Follow the timing of the Lord. And as Israel was waiting, the chariots of the Egyptians were getting closer and closer. Their faith was being tested, being still before God, waiting upon God. It's difficult. And I'll tell you why it's difficult. Because it goes against our instinct. It goes against carnal nature. It goes against everything that's in us. And as we're sitting still, waiting upon God, our nature taunts us. And Satan challenges us. And the enemies seek to provoke us, and even the well-meaning of God's people seek to get us to do something. Don't just sit there. Do something. It's a test of faith to wait upon the Lord. It's a challenge to wait upon God. Hear the words of David in Psalm 69 and 3. I am weary of my crying. My throat is dried, mine eyes fail, while I wait for my God. So you see, this was a test. He was weary with crying as he's waiting for God. His throat is dried as he's waiting for God. His eyes are failing as he waits for God. Things were not getting easier as he waited for God. They were getting more and more difficult. And that's why it's a test. The Egyptians were getting closer to the Israelites as they stood still. Don't think for a moment that when God told the Israelites to stand still, that the Egyptians stopped also. That's not so. They kept pursuing. They kept getting closer and closer. But they didn't move until God told them to. No matter how difficult it is, we read in Lamentations 3 and verse 26, it is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait. That's being still. Quietly wait. The quieting of our hearts. Quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. I want to tell you something. It takes a great amount of spirituality to wait upon the Lord. It doesn't take any spirituality at all to run down to Egypt. It doesn't take any spirituality at all to lean on your own strength and to adopt the policies of man. But it takes an enormous amount of spirituality to wait upon the Lord. So how are we to be still? How are we to wait? Well, we're to do so prayerfully for God's instruction. Notice in Psalm 25, so again, you see, it's not doing nothing. We're to be doing something while we're waiting. We're to be praying. Psalm 25, verses 4 and 5. Show me thy ways, O Lord, teach me thy paths, lead me in thy truth, and teach me, for thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day. He's praying, and he's waiting. And he's waiting. This waiting prayerfully is not determined by our time frame. We read in Hosea 12 and verse 6, wait on thy God continually. Just keep on waiting. Don't put a time limit on God. All right, God, if you don't do this by the end of the day, then I'm going to have to take over. I mean, that's the attitude of many folks. Lord, if you're not going to do something about this, then I'll do it. Yeah, and you'll make a mess of it. And you'll bring all kinds of distress into your life. Don't put a time frame on God, but submit to God's time frame. That takes spirituality. To submit to God's time frame. Don't put a schedule upon God. But He's to be the God of your schedule. Don't put a schedule upon God. We are to wait believing in His Word. Psalm 130 verse 5, I wait for the Lord, my soul doth wait, and in His Word do I hope. As we wait, we're to just keep on believing. We're to wait with much assurance. We read in Psalm 33 and verse 20, our soul waiteth for the Lord, He is our help and our shield. There's assurance there. We're to wait with expectation. Psalm 62 and verse 5. My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from Him. So to wait with expectation. Micah 7 verse 7, I await for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. Which again implies that He's praying. We're to wait single-mindedly. Again, Psalm 62, verse 5, my soul, wait thou only upon God. We're to wait with strength and courage. Psalm 27, 14, wait on the Lord, be of good courage. That is, be of good courage while you wait. We're to wait patiently. Psalm 37, verse 7, rest in the Lord and wait patiently, enduringly for Him. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way. Wait upon God. We're to wait obediently. We read in Psalm 37, 34, wait on the Lord and keep his way. We're to just keep on obeying while we wait. We are to be still, and we are to wait. Notice Jeremiah chapter 14. Jeremiah 14, verse 22. Are there any among the vanities of the Gentiles that can cause rain? Can the power of man cause rain? Can the heavens give showers? Art not thou He, O Lord, our God? The Lord can. But He's telling us God is able. Notice the conclusion. Therefore, we will wait upon thee, for thou hast made all these things. Wait upon God. He's the God of salvation. Wait upon Him. He's the giver of blessings. Wait upon Him. Wait upon the Lord. Their strength is in being still. And so it is with you and I. Now notice in Isaiah 64. Isaiah 64 and verse 4. For since the beginning of the world, men have not heard nor perceived by the ear, neither hath I seen, O God, beside thee, what he hath prepared for him that waiteth for him. God has prepared great things for the one who learns, and it is something we learn, to be still and to wait upon God. This waiting upon God is the proper place for the creature. Psalm 104, verse 27, these, speaking of creation, wait all upon thee. That's what creation does. That's what the birds do. That's what creation does. And God provides. In closing, in Psalm 30 and verse 7, or Isaiah 30 verse 7, again Isaiah is rebuking them for the foolish policy of going down to Egypt for help. And he's greatly burdened. He's greatly burdened that they would grasp this truth of the value of being still before God. Notice what he says there in the last part of verse 7. Well, let's just read verse 7. For the Egyptians shall help in vain. The Egyptians would help them. It would all be vain and to no purpose. Therefore, he says, have I cried concerning this? Their strength is to sit still. His heart is burdened that the people of Judah would learn this lesson, that they're not going to find what they need in Egypt. They're not going to be strengthened by going down to Egypt. They're going to be strengthened by getting in the presence of God and quieting ourselves and sitting still and waiting for God to move. Oh, that we would learn that we would keep learning that every single day of our life. I'm here to tell you tonight that your life will be easier, more enjoyable, if you learn to sit still before God and to wait upon Him. But if you insist on taking matters into your own hands, you insist on going down to Egypt for help, you're going to live the life of the chicken rather than living the life that you could live, a life of soaring to greater heights spiritually, a life of going further and further and further spiritually. Don't let anyone ever convince you that it is a spiritual thing to take matters into their own hands. I've had people tell me, I care so much so I have to do something. Well, let me tell you something. You should care enough to wait upon God. Do you care that much? Do you care enough to just wait upon the Lord rather than making a mess of things? If we really care, we'll wait. We'll quiet ourselves in the presence of God. There's strength there. The very strength of God is found in being still and waiting upon the Lord. Again, that we would learn that valuable lesson, that we would be reminded of it every single day. We can be strengthened just being in the presence of God. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us to verse song.